Hello and welcome to Bright Wings, children's books to make the heart soar. I am your host, Charity Hill. The purpose of this conversation is to help mothers and fathers identify books that will liberate their children to embrace truth, goodness, and beauty. Ain't it great to be surprised sometimes? You think you know yourself, and then all of a sudden something enters your life and surprises you. That's how I feel today about the author I'm going to feature. He is not the typical author that I think I would like, and he's not the typical author that I'd imagine recommending to you, perhaps, when I first started the Bright Wings project. He is horribly successful, and he does not need my approval or promotion of him. He has written 101 books and counting. The first time he published a book, he was 13, and I think this year he's just now turning 60. He's loved by mainstream publishing houses. He has a grueling school visit and traveling schedule. He's published 35 million copies of his novels worldwide, and they've been translated into 32 languages. Do you know who I'm talking about yet? It's Gordon Corman. Ever since his book was first published in 1978, he's been publishing contemporary fiction. Typically not my favorite kind of fiction, to be honest. And that's exactly why I'm surprised to discover that I have a liking for his writing. So just to clarify, what do I mean by contemporary fiction? What is the kind of stuff he writes? Contemporary means it's happening in the present day. It's realistic. It's contemporary adventure or mystery. And let me tell you, it's great to be surprised. I love that I can love this guy. Out of the dozen or so books of Gordon Corman's that I've read in the past year, there's only one that I would recommend that you not read, in fact. I started reading him because of his Mastermind series, and then I had to look deeper because he's written 101 books, and how can you publish that much if it's not good? I knew it was theoretically possible, but I had to take a look. I guess you could say in the past year I've read about 10% of everything Gordon Corman has written. So just in terms of measuring the author, that is my sample size. I wanted to tell you, too, most of what I've read has been Gordon Corman's later works, his later novels. And I will be offering you just a few sentence review of each of the books that I've read so that you can know specifically what those are like. But overall, I just want to tell you my impression of Gordon Corman's work is that they're really fun. They're pretty lighthearted. They're really decent and clean overall. There are reliably good things happening in his stories. The books are not densely written, right? They're not deeply reflective across the board for the entire novel. My eldest daughter's description of Gordon Corman novels is, quote, "It seems like his writing is written for not very reflective people," she said, "or maybe perhaps it's just written for a range of ages." But the good thing is that if you are a reflective person or an older kid, you can get even more out of them. That's pretty much a direct quote. So it's actually there. Like, there's depth present. There are opportunities for self-reflection going on in these books. They're meaningful without being moralistic. The dozen or so books I've read of Gordon Corman all fall within my parameters of offering your children books that are benign to excellent. These books are definitely benign, with the exception of one, and I'll go into that later. If you have a fairly psychologically young reader, an uncomplicated mind, an uncomplicated child, these are really decent stories. And if you have a child that is able to see a little further, these books have more to them to see. I love that right in there, along with all the laughs, Gordon Corman has some meaningful and meaty things going on. The setting for a lot of his novels is school. So that's also kind of fun. When you're a kid, man, school is your world. And Gordon Corman reflects at length on all the permutations of kids' lives related to friendships at school and teachers and sports activities, after school clubs, and the impact of all of these things on the development of the characters. Another thing to note about Gordon Corman's style, in all the books of his that I've read, all 10 to 12, the narrative perspective shifts from chapter to chapter between different characters. Just like I told you in the Masterminds review, he's done that in 9 of the 12 books of his that I've read. Perhaps it's something he started doing in his latest dozen books. Most of the time, I like it and appreciate it. Most of the time, it's enriching. Sometimes I actually just want to hear the narrative from one character, but often switching narrative perspectives gives you a different view on other characters or a different view of the same problem or circumstances in the, going on in the book. Occasionally, this switching of the narrator gets a little formulaic. Sometimes it's a little annoying because I want development and I want depth. I want to unpack a little more specifically what's going on with a particular character. But briefly, I just want to say something about contemporary fiction in general that I've been kind of waiting for an opportunity to say, which is that I think the reason why I don't usually love contemporary fiction is because I get this nihilistic feeling when I'm reading it that all we've got is right now, that there's no compass, that there's no north or south, no east or west, no reference point outside our situation. And I guess what that points to in me is that sometimes I read fiction because I enjoy having my perspective enlarged by reading about a time or a situation or a setting that is unlike my own, because that helps me see more. And sometimes in contemporary fiction, I feel like the author or the characters are limited to their contemporary situation and they can't see beyond it themselves, like they're trapped in their own narrative almost. That is not the case with Gordon Corman's novels. I don't have that sort of psychosomatic response to his novels. Overall, in his novels, there's this energetic drive towards problem solving that's probably also increased because he does switch the narrative from character to character. And in most of them, the problems are external most of all, although obviously the interesting part is some of the interior change that happens in the character. And so it's reasonable that the character doesn't stagnate in developing their own identity, but the external action happening in the novel continues to prompt character development. Now, you know, earlier I reviewed Gordon Corman's trilogy, his Masterminds trilogy. Of the dozen books or so I've read, the two that are tied for favorite, in my opinion, are titled Schooled and Restart. Schooled tells us the story of a character called Capricorn Anderson, who is part of a hippie commune. Well, in fact, he and his hippie grandmother, one of the founders of the commune, are the only two members left. And when she breaks her hip, he has to go into a foster care situation. This means Capricorn, or Cap, is thrown into a typical public school situation, and he is completely clueless. He's a really wonderful kid, and he's actually been formed by the very beautiful, peaceful principles of his hippie commune, and he's probably the most sincere member of the community. Maybe, we find out, even more sincere than his granny. And even though you just wince when he goes to school and he is definitely not popular and the cool kids gang up on him to basically make him the king of fools by voting him class president, he actually wins everyone over. And it's a great book about staying true to your principles, staying true to the truths that guide you, staying true in all circumstances. Now, Capricorn does become a little bit socially wiser, a little bit more clued in, but he doesn't compromise who he is. And his confidence in who he is one of his most winsome attributes. People are attracted to him in the end because he knows who he is. Funny book, smart book, I would hand it to any boy, but generally anybody. Also tied for first, in my opinion, is the story called Restart. Restart is the story of Chase Ambrose, the jock, jerk football player, probably smart, but acts like a meathead bully. We first meet him after he is waking up in the hospital. He's fallen off the roof and doesn't remember who he is or anything about himself before waking up in the hospital. Come to find out, he discovers that he is a complete jerk and everyone in the halls at school is afraid of him, except for his football playing friends. At least they say they're his friends. But Chase just isn't that into them anymore. Chase, in fact, wants to be apparently quite different from what he used to be. Some people even think that his change to good behavior is some practical joke that he's just playing out over time. And I'm going to say this next thing, it's going to lift the hair off your head. If I was going to choose a modern book that was as close to the Confessions of St. Augustine as possible, it would be Restart. It's a great book about what is it like when you want to change your life? Who's going to believe that you're different? Is there room in my community for me to be a different person? It's probably good to know that there's a bit of slang, there's some bullying, there's some fractured family relationships, and there are maybe three sort of blasphemies, like saying Jesus or God. So that is Restart, and the other one was called Schooled, and I would highly recommend both of them. There's one that I read called Operation Do-Over, which concerns a similar theme of trying to see what it would be like if your life was different. It concerns the desire to make different choices and to see what effect that would have, these different choices would have on my life. In this case, in Operation Do-Over, it's the story of two friends, Mason and Ty, who are described as two sides of one nerdy coin. And the story is specifically concerned with Mason. After an accident, he kind of loses his memory and he goes back and forth in time to a particular moment, to a particular friendship where he made a certain decision. And the book concerns, what if I could just undo that decision? What would my life be like if I could go back in time and redo this moment in this friendship? Again, that book's called Operation Do-Over. It's good. It's decent. It's fine. It's just not as awesome as Restart. The story, Ungifted, tells us of a kid named Donovan Curtis, who is a class act prankster. Definitely not a kid who's ever been called gifted. Intellectually, he's pretty basic. He pulls a big prank that's going to get him probably expelled from the school, but then a mix-up happens, and he is accidentally put on the list of gifted students and sent to the Academy for Scholastic Distinction. It's a great place to hide out from the trouble at his old school. Only he has to keep fooling people who operate at genius level. The part of the story that I love the most is that even though they're starting to discover that Donovan is not a genius, his human gifts are sorely needed and really appreciated by his new friends at the ASD. Definitely one of the funniest books of the dozen Gordon Corman books I've read. There's a really great Come From Behind science fair win. You'll probably love the genius friends at his new school and want to throttle his prankster friends from his old school. Again, that book was called Ungifted. The next one I want to talk to you about is called The Unteachables. And it's the reverse story of Ungifted. The Unteachables actually concerns a girl who thinks of herself as a temporary student who is accidentally placed in the classroom of the school misfits. And who's teaching this class? The misfit teacher, the teacher who's been simply showing up and waiting for retirement. Mr. Kermit is the teacher. He used to be a star teacher until he was accused of a cheating scandal from which he's never recovered his honor. Mr. Kermit just wants to get through the school year and retire early. However, the principal wants to completely torpedo him and force him to lose his early retirement and his funding. This is one classroom full of highly specific, very particular, memorable characters. The kids in this classroom and the teacher, they learn to care. They learn to care about themselves, they learn to care about each other, and they learn to care about learning. Hopefully it's not much of a spoiler to tell you that there's redemption and a lot of laughs involved. Now, the last two books I want to tell you about both involve Gordon Corman's narration of two different gangster slash mobster stories. The first one's called Notorious, and it concerns the island of Centerlight, a fictional town on the U.S.-Canada border. Half the island and half the town is in Canada, the other half is in the United States. The story concerns two kids, Keenan, a boy, and Zebe, a girl. Keenan is recovering from tuberculosis, which he acquired traveling around the world with his mom. He's only in Centerlight to recover, he thinks. He's just there temporarily. Doesn't want to really be anywhere. In fact, doesn't think it's important to have roots. Zebe, the girl main character, is obsessed with Centerlight history as a smuggling route for gangsters between the U.S. and Canada. She's a little bit eccentric. She thinks her giant dog, Barney, was murdered. And for good reason, because the giant dog used to be hated by everybody in town because he terrorized them and caused huge amounts of destruction and damage. It's a book about friendship. It's a book about U.S.-Canadian relations. It's a book about gangsters. And it's also a book about how the two team up to see whether there really is treasure to be found and solve the mystery of whether indeed Barney the dog was murdered. And hopefully they can do all that before the bad guys get him. Now, this book, Notorious, is just fun. It doesn't have hardly any of the life lessons that can be tucked away in some of Gordon Corman's other work. The main sort of deeper point I feel like this book Notorious makes is that Kanan does discover the specificity of place and the importance of belonging somewhere, somewhere specific. While not a main point of the book, it's a beautifully made point in the book. Now, the second book, the second mobster-gangster-related book from Gordon Corman that I wanted to talk about is called Son of the Mob. It's the first in a duology. This is the only Gordon Corman book out of the dozen that I've read that I would discourage you from handing to your child. And I read it so that you don't have to. If you look at a list of Gordon Corman's novels, you would probably pick this one out as being the most likely to need investigation, most likely to need a preview. And it did. A summary of the story is this. There's a high school boy named Vince Luca, who's a pretty normal boy in every way. He and his friend, their big concern right now is to get with a girl. The problem with Vince's life in its day-to-day operations, it's pretty normal, except that all the time impinging on everything going on in Vince's life is the fact that his dad is a major mob kingpin, and his mom is a totally supportive kingpin wife, completely up to her neck in the business. Vince appreciates it when teachers want to give him good grades, but he can't stand it when he's trying to play football and nobody will hit him and just lets him score because they're afraid of his dad. Vince keeps trying to live his life, but the mob connections keep impinging on him all the time. Pretty crucially, he falls in love with a girl named Kendra, and they discover, to their horror, that Kendra's dad's an FBI agent who's been watching the Luca family, monitoring and listening to them for years. Vince wants to stay out of the family business, but he is good-hearted enough that he's trying to bail out a couple of people who owe his dad money. Vince's big question is, is he clever enough to stay out of the family business, do the right thing, and not send his family to jail? Now, Son of the Mob tries to be so good-hearted, and it is pretty light-hearted considering some of its heavy themes, but really, it's a book worth skipping. It is, let's be clear, it is a young adult book, not a middle grade fiction book. So this book is not even found in the same section of the library as the other Gordon Corman novels. However, if you typically let your kids request books at the library, it's going to pop up as an option if you're searching for Gordon Corman books. So you could end up requesting it at the library, not knowing that it is an entirely different tone of book that Gordon Corman wrote. So let me tell you what's going on in it. Okay, so it's a young adult book. Why? Because thematically, it's different. What are some of those thematic differences? Well, there's plenty of sexual references. It's clear that both Vince and his best friend want to go all the way. His best friend is trying to live vicariously through, quote unquote, Vince's love life, though Vince doesn't really tell his bud any details, at least. But you can't have a book like this without reference to some of the mob's dirtier themes, right? So, you know, if there's a good-hearted way to do it, Corman tries, but I can't really apologize for a book where the main character's brother surprises him with meeting a call girl from which Vince narrowly escapes. That's his big brother's idea of like making things up to him for a mistake that his brother made earlier. There's a scene in which a bunch of high school students go to a frat party that is like just blisteringly loud and super slimy drunk situation. So there are these sort of sexual related, use related, prostitution related references. The main character doesn't do any of those things, but he's still like visiting places where these things happen in order to communicate with some of his father's business associates. And while it's clear that Vince wants out and he's trying to do the right thing, it's pretty hard for Corman to give a serious reckoning with the evils and exploitations of the mob. If he did, it would push him further into the young adult category with this book. But since he's already there, I wish he would have gone ahead and made the book more serious and taken things a little further, been more reflective. Again, this book is just a reminder to you that we need to pay attention to whether we're handing our child a book that's middle grade fiction or young adult fiction. So we're not tricked. So we're not handing our children a box of slimy salad. All right. So I do want to emphasize that so much of Gordon Corman is benign and can be said even to bear some scrutiny for those of us who can't abide handing our children vacuity. One of the great values of Gordon Corman's enormous list of books is that as long as it's listed middle grade, you have got a book list full of benign, funny books with nuggets of goodness tucked inside. That is one of the things that I love about Corman, is that he has written 101 books and counting, and his latest couple that have just been published in the past year, and then in January of this, of 2023, I really want to read them. One is called Linked, and another one is called The Fort. They're middle grade novels that are more serious Gordon Corman, or the most serious Gordon Corman, I think, has been yet. I'm keenly interested in reading them. So even though Son of the Mob and then its sequel are maybe duds, I still think Gordon Corman is worth recommending to voracious readers, to kids who need a lighter book that still has some meaning. Corman offers a lot of good options. I highly recommend the book list in the show notes. It's going to direct you to links to my bookshop site where you could purchase them through my bookshop links if you want. But I highly recommend that book list. It'll outline all the books that I talked about here today. I won't put Son of the Mob on it, so you'll know that anything on that book list is trustworthy. And again, guys, if I continue to read more Gordon Corman, which may happen, and if I judge them to be worthy of your children, if I think that they're benign to excellent, then I'll put them on that book list as well. So you can keep finding that through my website and through these show notes. I hope this review of Gordon Corman's works has been helpful to you. And if you're able, I would be so grateful if you could rate this podcast, especially on iTunes, but wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. That would really help me. I spend a lot of time reading and thinking and trying to give as generous a reading as I can to everything that I read. Also with the understanding that you are counting on me, so that you're not handing your child a stone when he asks for a loaf of bread or a snake when he asks for a fish. So I just want you to be equipped to be able to make good decisions for your children. Thank you for listening, friends. Thank you for rating.